Welcome back to the Men's Health Show here at NYU Langone. This is Dr. Hossein Sidiqui-Najjar. I'm your host. We're live from NYU Langone campus. You're listening to Dr. Radio on Sirius XM 110. Call us at 877-NYU-DOCS. That's 877-698-3627. Or you could email us at docs@siriusxm.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at NYU Docs. But as I said, importantly, we'd love to hear from you. My guest tonight is Dr. Kava Alizadeh. He's a board-certified plastic surgeon here in New York City. He's an old friend and colleague, and we're talking about various aspects of plastic surgery. During the last hour, we talked about anatomic changes of aging in males, as well as current trends in male plastic surgery. I wanted to shift gears a little bit, Kaveh, and talk about male pattern baldness and some of the current treatments that are there. Many of our patients ask about this, of course. When I see my patients and they ask about male pattern baldness, I point to my own hair, which is essentially non-existent, and I tell them that they're asking the wrong person. But I figured we'd ask you about what's new out there and what can men do.
Sure. This is the thing that affects men the most. Mm-hmm. So it's important to know that 25% of men with male pattern baldness begin losing their hair by the age of 21. You actually start losing hair by the age of 16, but mm-hmm. you don't notice it because mm-hmm. we have over 100,000 hair follicles. Mm-hmm. So if you're losing 2,000 or 3,000, that's not really noticeable. Mm-hmm. But if you start getting to lose over 15% of the total, mm-hmm. that's when you start noticing it. And for most men, as you know, the pattern is the receding hairline in the front, and then the vertex, the top of the head, mm-hmm. where you start losing that hair. So a few things that are happening. The way to think about this, again, is number one, we need to understand how the hair follicle growth pattern works. Mm-hmm. So the hair follicles go through different cycles. They have a growth cycle in which they're actively out. Mm-hmm. They're coming out, and that's when you get to see the hair. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then there is the shedding cycle in which the hair, then essentially the shaft sort of detaches from the follicle and falls off. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have a resting phase of the hair. Mm-hmm. And during that, think of it as hibernation.
Uh-huh.
Right, so a lot of the hair is actually sitting in that hibernation phase. So there's mechanisms to be able to switch the hair to go into the growth cycle. Mm-hmm. The idea is that you can have more hair that are in the active cycle, and you get to see more of that hair.
I see.
And that's the idea with the stem cells.
Uh-huh. So, and is there an age, if you had your pick, is there an age preference for that or not really?
Yeah, like anything else, the younger, the better.
The better.
I sort of equate it with, when it comes to hair, stimulating the hair to grow is like stimulating muscle. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine if the more you go to the gym, the more you stress that mm-hmm. muscle to respond, the more it's going to respond.
Of course.
Same thing. So, and also if you're older, mm-hmm. you see less of a response mm-hmm. versus young men. So the younger you are, that's why stem cell is a good strategy when you're young. Most men are noticing things by the time they're in their 20s. Mm-hmm. So I like to get them started on there are different levels of stem cells. Mm-hmm. So I like to get them started on stem cells.
Yeah.
So the one everyone's heard about is PRP.
Yeah.
Right? That's the platelet-derived. So that is sort of the basic level of stem cells. Mm-hmm. Then you have fibrin-based, so PRF, mm-hmm. right? So the fibrin-based has a higher concentration because the way you process it, the fibrin has a higher concentration of stem cells. Mm-hmm. Then the next level is exosomes. As we talked about, you're able to go and take fat, which has the highest concentration that is accessible to us. Mm-hmm. We take that, we process it, and we inject that.
Does it matter where the fat comes from in your body?
No, it doesn't. As far as we know, there is no advantage of one. Now, we like to go to the easiest place for men, which is the love handle.
Yeah.
Right, so that's where we usually get it from. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The last one is the bone marrow.
Uh-huh.
As you know, that's where the bone marrows really are the ones that are sort of the drivers of stem cells.
Sure.
That's where they sit. Mm-hmm. That one is a bit more involved, but it does give you the highest concentration of colony forming units of stem cells that we know of. With that one, we have to give you an IV because we put it under fluoroscopy, so we're using an X-ray to see exactly where the middle of the bone is,
mm-hmm.
and that's where we go to draw the stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we process it, we separate it.
And for example, this is the kind of thing that is all done, for example, at your center. You just do
So that one takes about an hour, the whole thing, by the time we take it, because it takes time to process these things.
Yeah, of course.
But they're all done in anywhere from 15 minutes to 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's the time.
And is this particular procedure, this is something that I would assume most of your patients are men for this, or no?
95% are men. There are women that also have, you know, what's interesting, women have it, but it's usually women that are aging. They're sort of around menopause.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
it starts in their 40s, and it's mostly thinning.
I see.
So remember, when you see hair thinning, it's two things that are happening. It's less hair in play. So mm-hmm. they're in that telogen phase we talked about, sort of
mm-hmm.
the hair
mm-hmm.
being in different phases. And also you have the thinning of the fiber,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? As we age, as the hair follicles ages, it tends to be more dry.
Mm-hmm.
It loses pigment. It tends to be more dry.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have as much sebaceous activity, so
mm-hmm.
it doesn't keep the oil on it, so
mm-hmm.
it dries out, and it also tends to thin out.
I see.
So those are the stages that you see. So if you look at an old man, right, you can see through their hair.
Of course.
Because they have a sort of a thinner hair with less hair follicles.
Of course.
So what we want to do is sort of drive this back to the sort of the, you know, towards high activity, less hibernation.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you stimulate, the more stem cells you know, going back to your world, I always give this example. I'm like, okay, so if you have two guys, and they're both doing the same workout, but
mm-hmm.
I give one of them testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is going to look better?
Yeah.
Like, oh, the one with testosterone. Okay, that's what we're doing. We're stimulating.
That's exactly growth, what we're doing, anabolic right? state.
So it's a very, exactly. We're sort of driving the anabolic state for this. So
mm-hmm.
that's one strategy for the young people.
Mm-hmm.
The second strategy, as you know, testosterone or a metabolite of testosterone, DHT, is the driver for the receptors that are on the scalp for the hair to fall out or
exactly.
not grow.
Mm-hmm.
So then you want to block that pathway. And again, this comes from
the
help of,
and,
correct. Yeah. That comes from, with the help of our urology friends like you,
mm-hmm.
that we learn that if we use these drugs
mm-hmm.
that are actually blocking the pathway, they can potentially help with the hair.
Mm-hmm.
They don't grow the hair back. If you've lost the hair, it's not going to come back, but it will certainly help maintain it.
So in your practice, there is a, you know, so you sort of combine these modalities, sort of medical therapies, and then some of these sort of stem cell techniques.
Yeah, because, I mean, we know these, I mean, this has been a time-tested, you know, finasteride and dutasteride are they have stood the test of time with
mm-hmm.
regards to this. I always do recommend to them to see their urologist because there is a, you know, the syndrome.
Of course.
With finasteride,
of course.
So it's important for them
mm-hmm.
to know about it and
mm-hmm.
understand it because that's not within my expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's important for them to know the option
mm-hmm.
that, you know, that's an option. And minoxidil, which is a high blood pressure medication that's been around for 40 years.
Yeah, now. Yeah. And so when you do these things, how long is the typical period where you tell the patient you may begin to see some changes? Like, let's say when you do the stem cell treatments that you're discussing.
Yeah, so for all of these, we want to follow the cycle of the hair,
mm-hmm.
and that can be anywhere from 6 to 9 months.
Got it.
So you have to give it the entire cycle to be able to make sure that you've seen a rise in what you're doing in your treatment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Invariably, I either advise my patients to do the, you know, if they're doing the, you know, PRP or PRF, they need to do it on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're not getting as much impact. But if you're introducing a lot higher concentration with things like exosomes or bone marrow,
mm-hmm.
then you don't need to do it as often. So you're
mm-hmm.
now you're spreading it out to like twice a year.
Interesting. You know, it's always fascinated me how different aspects of medicine have different applications, different fields. For example, in our world, for example, of sort of the novel and emerging treatments for erectile dysfunction, you know, there's the shockwave and there's a lot of new emerging data. It's typically it's it's better for mild erectile dysfunction problems. And even that is still not sort of has not received the stamp by the American Urological Association or the Sexual Medicine Society. And one of the challenges there is we don't know how many shocks, what machine, how often. I mean, in Europe it's approved, they're doing it. But I will tell you that I think that will probably be coming on board for a while. But the reason I brought this thought up is that for example, PRP has been more iffy in our field, you know. Right. But for example, I know ortho guys use it all the time.
Yeah.
So again, different applications, different parts of the body, and that's really, really fascinating to me.
But you know, remember, I mean, they use PRP a lot as an anti-inflammatory. So there's two parts to this. Mm-hmm. One is, are you using it as an anti-inflammatory mechanism?
Mm-hmm.
Right. If patients are in the ortho world, if they're having pain, it's usually an inflammatory condition, and they're using it, or are you actually using it to drive
things?
This phenomena, physiologic phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. There's very little science, at least in my world, to actually show functionally you're changing things.
Exactly.
Right. So the thought process now is that, you know, we know that we're using your own autologous, that we're using your own tissue.
That's right.
So you have very little, you know,
to worry about in terms of exactly
impurities, infection, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And at least the thought process makes sense that if I use your own stem cells at a high concentration, I should be able to drive things to the way that it should be. That's
that
the
makes
thought
sense.
Process.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Again, for our listeners, we have Dr. Cavalizade. He's a board certified plastic surgeon. I'm certainly learning so much. This show is usually obviously very urology focused and sexual function and andrology focused. We've talked about testosterone, Peyronie's disease, things that are in sort of my area of expertise. But tonight, I am learning so much from Dr. Alizade, who's a plastic surgeon here in New York City. We want to hear from you. Call us at 877-NYU-DOCS. If you have any questions for Dr. Alizade, 877-698-3627, or just email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. So to go back to our discussion, can you tell us, you talked a little bit about the injectables. Can you tell us a little bit more about lasers and how, I mean, in my world, again, we use lasers all the time. We break up stones using lasers. We mm-hmm. take out prostates using lasers. But tell me how lasers come into play in your world.
The way we think about lasers is we use each wavelength for the target that we're interested in. So I may use a laser because a patient comes in and has a skin pigmentation, and I will use a specific wavelength of the laser to knock out that pigmentation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or as I mentioned earlier, if I have a blood vessels that are coming to the surface on a patient that has rosacea, where mm-hmm. they tend to get red with working out mm-hmm. or in the sun, or you know, when they drink wine, that is a great candidate to do a specific type of laser at a wavelength of 580 mm-hmm. nanometers, right? Mm-hmm. So then now I can go after the red and take the red out.
Interesting.
Now you may have a patient that comes in and has very, you know, wrinkles on their face, and I want to resurface that. Now I use either a CO2 laser, right, a resurfacing laser that sort of gets rid of the top layer of the skin in a very controlled way
mm-hmm.
so that the new skin can come in.
Interesting.
So that those are the different ways we use the lasers.
Or
I may have a patient who has a scar, and I may use a laser called profractional laser, where you're drilling a very tiny beam of light mm-hmm. into the scar to release the scar so it's not as tight, and then to allow it to remodel again in a softer way.
Mm-hmm. And so that's really fascinating. And to sort of change gears a little bit, and I don't want to put you on the spot about this, but I know that for a while there was a big concern about people who are not necessarily plastic surgeons or certified by the Board of Plastic Surgery doing these procedures. Is that still a problem in your world? Like, you are seeing people who really shouldn't be doing some of these things that are doing it. And what is your advice to our patients?
Yeah, well
to our listeners.
Yeah, to our listeners. Well, you know, there's two major trends that have happened in our world, and I'm mm-hmm. sure you've seen it too. One is the fact that you have people that are presenting themselves as being qualified and they're not. Mm-hmm. For example, in my world, if someone says, I'm a cosmetic surgeon, that sounds like they should be qualified to do your procedure. But there is no board right. of cosmetic surgery, per se,
right.
that exists. Right. And you can arrive there from being a radiologist, a dentist, okay. you could be anything, yeah. and say, starting now, I'm a cosmetic
I'm
surgeon.
Doing it.
So the most important thing for your listeners is to know that if you're going to have plastic surgery, you need to have it by someone who's within the American Board of Plastic Surgeons. Because mm-hmm. that means they've done the right training, they've passed the right boards, just as much as they are with
exactly.
Urology yeah. Certification.
Yeah.
The other trend that's happening is this idea of, what do you call it, when they travel abroad.
I know exactly what you mean. So basically surgery at a discount in different countries
where they have
no idea
right.
exactly.
So there's two issues with that. One is that you haven't even met your physician. You've met them online usually until you get there. Mm-hmm. And you have no idea what the facilities are going to be like, right? You don't know if they're accredited or properly. Mm-hmm.
Proper sterilization.
Yeah, you don't know that.
You just know the price.
Right. And the second part is that after the surgery, if God forbid things don't go well, you really have no way of getting yeah. back to that doctor because
yeah.
you're usually back in your country. We've published at least 4 papers on this mm-hmm. in our journal based on our experience of seeing patients in our hospitals.
Mm-hmm. That went elsewhere and were not
yeah,
served.
And have not served. And so people don't think about that, and that's a huge part of this buyer beware. Understand that it sounds easy that you're going on a vacation.
Of course.
But there's always this.
Do your homework.
Yeah, you got to really understand what you're getting in, and you cannot possibly know it if you have not met the people who are going to be
I mean, it's always
touching
amazing
your body,
to me.
Right?
It's always amazing to me. I mean, I've loved skiing all my life, but for that reason, I'm even worried about skiing abroad just because I worry about, injury and, who's going to take care of me and whatnot. But of course, if you go to the right places where they have good surgeons and hospitals, but to actually go to another country to have surgery done when you don't really know what you're getting into, I think is a very, very scary thought.
Those are the two things that, again, it doesn't mean, as you just mentioned, there are phenomenal plastic surgeons in many countries in the world, but you need to do your homework. You need to know, for example, a lot of these surgeons in other countries, they're also members of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons.
Of course.
Which is they've done the proper training to become a member there. Right?
Yeah.
So
while we're on this topic of sort of fringe services and whatnot, it's interesting. I was giving a talk earlier today to a company where they basically sponsor these health talks, and one of the guests asked me about testosterone supplements, not testosterone, but supplements that have testosterone. And what I told them, this is a huge problem. I've actually had a guest on this show, my good friend and colleague, Dr. Ira Charlotte. Both of us have worked with the Federal Trade Commission on this because, one of the things, since we're talking about men's health in general, is that often people don't realize that dietary supplements are not regulated like drugs. So you could go to a vitamin place and buy the same supplement, 2 boxes, and there could be a huge variation even in the ingredients of an individual pill because
Correct.
Unlike pills that are FDA regulated, those are not regulated. So the same way that people have to do their homework, sort of what you were alluding to, going outside the country, getting surgery, they really have to do their homework looking at what they're buying. And the example that I gave in my talk today, and again, I'm sorry to veer off topic from you, but I thought it's something that's interesting, is that, for example, as Viagra and Cialis and these drugs, these PDE5 inhibitors that we prescribed for sexual dysfunction, one of the contraindications are nitrates, right? So if a man is taking nitroglycerin for chest pain, they shouldn't be taking this drug.
That's right.
So then they see, oh, there's this herbal supplement that my gas station is selling, which says great erections.
Right.
And then what they don't know is that because it's a dietary supplement, it's not regulated, and it may actually include Viagra, which would be a big problem if, for example, they're on nitrates. So
you don't even know the levels. You don't even know which level
exactly,
is in there.
Exactly.
I know that that study was done when they took 10 different brands and they looked at the levels, and it was all over the place, including some that had nothing in it.
Exactly.
I know.
It's amazing. And in this case, it's actually really, really dangerous.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad we talked about this with regard to plastic surgery as well for the listeners out there who are contemplating these amazing new treatments that are available. And as we were talking earlier in the hour, the evolution of plastic surgery is to really do their homework. So for the last couple of minutes, I know that you have done a lot of humanitarian work going out there on missions. Tell us a little bit about some of the sort of more meaningful, rewarding, reconstructive things you have done in your life, some of the maybe charitable things that you've done mm-hmm. through some of these missions that you have done.
Our work has evolved over the past 20, I've been at this for 25 years with regards to medical missions. And I would say our work has evolved over the past 20 years or so, in that we started by going to places that had need with the idea of, you know, changing the lives, obviously, of people in the local places. And that was mostly related to war and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of work in Afghanistan and Iraq and Myanmar and mm-hmm. Occupied territories of Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
But what we realized is that you can never secure your return there, because you're not in control of the environment, right? If I'm, you know, we went to Afghanistan twice and things got so bad that we couldn't go back,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so same with Myanmar. Myanmar underwent a major social radical change. And so we had set up clinics there and we were supporting doctors and we realized we couldn't go back.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2016, we made a shift that we're not going to be doing sort of this. And there's a great role for this, by the way,
mm.
with great organizations like Doctors Without Borders and many, many others. But our view was that we're going to just stay in one place and build a foundation with long-term approach,
mm-hmm.
a sustainable approach.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The idea being that we're just going to train doctors in one area. So the area that we picked was Central Africa, namely Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and to some extent Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
So those are countries that thankfully don't have a lot of social upheaval. And so over the past 8 years or so, we've been just focused in those areas. We've been doing training there. We do
in Africa.
In Central Africa.
Exactly.
There was a great article that came out of Lancet that sort of looked at the disparity between doctors and populations. And that was one of the red hot areas of need. So we've been focused there. We've been training doctors to become surgeons and then either plastic or burn surgeons. And for example, we have a hospital in Mwanza, which is the second largest city in Tanzania, by mm-hmm. way of example. It has a catchment area of 14 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And they went from having no plastic surgeons to now they will be having their third plastic surgeon.
Interesting.
Right. And Tanzania as a whole is 45 million people with about five plastic surgeons. So,
wow.
I mean, we're just talking about massive disparity. Fun. So if you can create these programs and help the young, brilliant doctors go first into surgery, which, as you know, is an essential part of medicine.
Of course.
It's not, people don't think of it that way in the West, but if you have a car accident, if you have a massive burn, or if you have a fracture where you cannot use your arms or legs, you're no longer working in the field. You're no longer working in the factory. That means that you've completely lost the ability to be an economic help.
That's right.
To your family or community.
That's right.
So surgery is the only way to help you get back to where you need to be, and that's why it should be essential.
Essential
surgery.
Services.
That's sort of been the trend in what we've been doing.
Thank you so much. That was really revealing. And
just one plug.
Of course.
Please,
of
our
course.
Work is at missionrestore.org. For anyone who wants to learn about it, please go to missionrestore.org. That is the foundation that's doing this
that's
work.
That's wonderful, wonderful. So we've come to the end of another show. I'd like to thank all of my guests as well as the callers this week. Thank you all for listening. If you have a question about something you heard on today's show, you can email us. The address is docs@siriusxm.com. Thank you again, and have a great week, and good night.